Johnson misses. Curry the rebound. The putback is fouled. Curry got possession on Dwight Howard as Curry floats into the corner and nails a three-pointer. Curry with the left hand floats it up hot off the glass.
Welcome, everybody, to the Pop and Joe podcast. What a game last night by Steph Curry and the Warriors.
What a series.
Fantastic. Just absolute fantastic series. I kind of didn't mind that it didn't go too long because I just couldn't watch the Rockets anymore. A little too much frustration watching that team, I'm not going to lie.
Well, I've said it before in previous podcasts. I think, you know, Howard, I just can't stand him at all.
Yeah,
at agreed. All. And Harden, I don't like him either. Although for Harden, I don't know why. I just don't like him.
Do you fear the beard?
No. I think it's the fact that, you know, he'll drive into the lane and throw his arms up and get a call.
Yeah, I saw that a couple times late in the game, and I was like, at this point, you should really just drive as hard as you can and try and get that layup down. And they were saying he had 14 points and 13 turnovers last night.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
And I look at that and go, you look at the previous game, the only game that they're able to survive, and what did they do? They survived because Harden scored 45 points.
Yeah.
And you look at the rest of the team, and I think Harden went in with the mentality saying that if we're going to win here, I need to do something. And so I think that's what wound up happening, is he felt that everything was on him. And yeah, when you put that kind of pressure on yourself, I think those mistakes are going to happen, and that's where you get all those turnovers. It's not like you can rely on one Mr. Dwight Howard.
No, exactly. You literally just stole the words right out of my head. I mean, looking at a guy like Dwight Howard, even in the Clippers series, I was saying to Jess when you were gone that the question mark for me on whether the Clippers could actually win is that, yeah, James Harden can put up 45 points. He has that in him. But when he's not at his game and at his, you know, peak performance, he really doesn't have anybody else to play with, I don't feel like. I mean, Dwight Howard he's talented, but he just has so much selfishness and so much ego that I feel like his game just doesn't round out to form because he's worried about other things. And, you know, like last night, taking that stupid foul and just hacking Iguodala. Like, at that point of the game, that is not something you should do. And then what happens, like, 2 minutes later, Jason Terry does the same thing coming across half court and, like, hacking one of the Warriors over the shoulder. Actually, I think it was Iguodala again. So, like, bad tempo setter, first of all, and he just doesn't really seem to be that guy that you could rely on if your number one guy's going, and he's definitely not the number one guy that he looked to be in Orlando.
Oh, no, definitely not. And the one thing that I took, it came out of Game 3. If there is ever anything, I think, that encompasses Dwight Howard as an NBA player, it was Game 3. There was a soundbite, and I wasn't able to find it. There was a soundbite pretty much at the just before Howard and Josh Smith were coming onto the court. And it was sworn, Howard turns over to Smith and says, "We can't just expect them to give it to us. We have to take it from them. We have to go out there and we have to take it."
This is about the game.
This is about the game. And what happens in that game? Little, I don't know if you can call any basketball player little, but little Steph Curry, as we heard in the opening intro, out-rebounds Dwight Howard. Like, how does that happen? Not only out, he pushes him out of the way and grabs the rebound. Offensive board. Like, if that doesn't tell you anything else about Dwight, that should tell you everything you need to know. He will never win a championship.
I don't believe so either. And I mean, it's funny you mention Steph Curry in the same light as Dwight Howard, because you would think that the longer-lasting pro in Dwight Howard, the bigger body, the guy who's been able to bang, and, you know, he has the ability to be a force, has significantly been outplayed by everybody on the Rockets. Oh, sorry, on the Warriors. And you look at everything he's done in his career, and it just went from, I feel like his culmination was blowing out a cupcake wearing a cape, and then it was done. I mean, then he claimed to be Superman, and then I think somewhat, a little part of him believes it, that, like, he is, but apparently Steph Curry and the Warriors are his kryptonite.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that guy is just fantastic, Steph Curry. And funny enough, I was driving in today, and they were talking to Alvin Williams, and he was saying that he used to shoot around and play like two-on-one against Del Curry and Steph Curry when Alvin and Del used to play together on the Raptors. And he said that if it was close to, like, if it was 9-9, they would go up to 11. He would make sure that Steph Curry doesn't get the ball. He would actually play defense on him because he would drain it from three-point land, NBA style. And he's like, the kid was wicked. Like, he was 12 years old, and he could shoot the lights out. At, like, and that range is what we've seen. There is no pressure that Steph Curry can handle this year, and it's fantastic to watch.
And as I said, he's got no fear.
Yeah.
You know, making it or not. And he, I go back to his, you know, 37 points by the end of the third quarter in game three. Phenomenal. And I look upon what he's done, and like I said, getting back to Howard, because if there's ever a rent, you know, he's one of them. One of the people, obviously, that I just... Can you imagine a team of Dwight Howard, Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady? And I don't know which other two you'd round that off. I've been trying to think about it. But players who put up such fantastic numbers, but can't win anything.
It's an interesting one.
And I just, you know, who would be the point guard that can fill in that role? And because I look at it and go, they have so much talent, and yet they don't have, I don't want to use the word heart, because sometimes that's overused.
You could argue they might have too much, in some sense. Like, I maybe not Vince, but no offense to Vince Carter, but I mean,
I think
it could be he wants it too much, that he becomes a suck. Like, you know, picture like the old schoolyard stuff, you know? Like, one guy always makes like every game, like game seven.
Or the kind of person, I think what may, they have, like you said, I think too much talent that they didn't need to develop that either work ethic or that grind to make them into champions because everything came easy to them. I wonder if that's what the issue is. But I find it in both their cases. And Alex, when you filled in last week, brought up a good point. You know, you go back 6-7 years ago, and if you were to think, you know, top 10 centers of all time, I'd argue you'd probably have Dwight Howard somewhere on that list.
Over the, like, the length of his career, like, after he was done?
Yeah, if you're thinking, if you go back, sure. If you go back, sure, his time in Orlando, you know, when they made the finals one year,
yeah,
right, you would look back and go, you know what, he continues like this, he'd definitely be one of the top 10 centers of all time. I don't think you can put him in there.
Well, like you said about having the, you know, the fizzle, having too much talent, but then not understanding the work ethic, that's kind of the prototypical explanation of every talented superstar that just fizzles out, you know? Yeah. He had it, but they just didn't know how to work at it. They didn't know how to, you know, push through. And I think you have a point there, because when you see overly skilled players frustrated, it's because they can't be skilled. Because guys shut them down, because guys slapped them around. And that's what playoff basketball is. So, like, notice to Dwight Howard, the next time you get to the playoffs, they're not going to let you just drive the post and stand there. I mean, it was so... That's the one thing that frustrated me the most with him. You look at him, he looks like he was... When he was born, he was cut. Like, just abs. Oh. Like, rock shoulders.
He's a god.
Yeah, like, he's chiseled out of stone. And the guy just doesn't want to do it sometimes. And it's frustrating to see, especially for such a talented and physically strong player in Dwight Howard. But...
And the second thing on that point is, might be, you know, the grinding out, not having to do that. I think it also has a lot to do with the people around him. And I have no idea who's around Dwight Howard. And I have no idea who's around Steph Curry. But I think because Dell wasn't... I mean, everybody knew that Dell could shoot. But the joke running back in the day, yes, I watched Dell Curry live.
Yeah.
Was his name was L. Curry, no D. He couldn't play defense.
Yeah.
So I think having a father like that went, you know what, son? You want to be a star, this is what you have to do. And so, you know, pushing him and training him and motivating him. Whereas I think maybe the people that are surrounding Howard right now are looking at him going, hey, Howard, you know what? Game three, you had 19 points and 17 rebounds. It wasn't your fault. You know what, Howard? It was. You still lost.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about getting the numbers. It's about doing whatever. And you see, Curry puts up the points, but it's everything else that he does on top of that that just makes him makes him the MVP and makes for an interesting finals that's coming up.
Yeah, the one thing I noticed too with, I don't know, it would seem to be maybe this is looking too far into the issue, but when you see a guy like Curry and then Klay Thompson drain it or come back and get a huge rebound or steal the ball, you see the whole like bench get up and cheer. And then when the play is done, they kind of all kind of group together and they're like, yeah, that was awesome. Like, way to go. Whereas on the Houston side, you would see Harden with a fantastic dunk or a wicked shot or like big rebound. And then you get kind of like the individual scowl and everybody's kind of doing their own thing. So I think, not to say that they're not necessarily a team, I'm not around them that much, but you could always tell when there's a buy-in, when there's like a team buy-in, team buy-in. I think in this case, it was a, you know, group plus team in Houston, whereas the Warriors just are a team. And it's funny because I think you're starting to see that more so now in Cleveland, where although it's, you know, LeBron and the team, it's starting to become LeBron's team. And they're all buying in to what that guy can do. I mean, that's probably just as fascinating as the Warriors in the NBA.
And I'm looking forward to a phenomenal finals. I think this is what you wanted when it began. You right. wanted a Cleveland Golden State final. I think it's great for basketball in terms of what both of these teams bring and what they play. And getting back to the whole team thing, there is, and you're a Canadian, we're Canadian here, so we tend not to like athletes that are arrogant.
Right.
There is an arrogance to Steph Curry.
There has to be. It's a swagger.
But for whatever reason, I'm okay with it. Are right. you?
I think so. If it's
most other people in the league,
yeah,
we'll tell them, oh, what a beep, bleep, bleep, yeah. bleep, bleep. But it's Steph Curry, so it's okay.
I know. I mean, and I've heard a couple people give the comparison to his physique and his demeanor to Kobe. Not necessarily being maybe as talented or as dominant, but the way when he's on the court, you can tell he doesn't give a crap.
About it, yeah.
Yeah, just anything and anybody, yep. and he's going to go through a brick wall. And he's not the biggest guy in the world. But I think, even Toronto, I think we kind of acknowledged that when Kyle Lowry was on his best. Like, when Kyle Lowry's on his A game, you like that, like, psh, I don't care about nothing right now. And, like, even when you get, you know, DeMar DeRozan's, like, no offense, DeMar, but the scowl, I don't know, I'm not 50-50 on that one.
He's so, the perma scowl, yeah.
It just doesn't look fantastic. Anyways, but both of them, I think we accepted that, but it's more because they're like the little engine that could.
We cheer for
him. Right? But if he was like 6'8", you'd be like, man, Steph Curry just he's the worst guy. But because he's like, what, 6'3" or something?
Yeah, we give point guards a little bit more credit.
Right, yeah. He's a little engine than could. So I like his push, his drive. He's got a real hockey mentality.
And you know, I haven't had time to digest it yet. But in terms of the matchup coming up, and first of all, NBA, come on. A whole week before you start the finals.
I know.
But whatever. I have no idea who's going to win this finals. I have no idea.
I'm going with the Splash Brothers.
Is that your heart or your head?
No, that's my head. Hmm. Only because if you look at the teams that the Cavaliers have gone through, I kind of feel like they were maybe like a... Maybe two of them had maybe one punch to give, but I mean, Atlanta was probably the softest number one seed I've seen in a very long time.
And that's hard to say for a team that won, what, 18, 19, 20 games in a row
yeah.
at one point, but I agree.
So, and then I can't remember who they faced in the two rounds before that right now. It kind of blanked me again.
But immaterial.
Right. I mean, ultimately, I feel like LeBron having to go toe-to-toe with not just Steph Curry, but...
Chicago,
exactly. So, I mean, there you have Derrick Rose. That's punch for punch. But at that time, he still had Kyrie Irving. I mean, in this one, with a healthy Kyrie Irving, though, I mean, it'd be a pretty good matchup. But I still think the team of Golden State is still a little beyond the Cleveland Cavaliers right now. But obviously, I could be wrong. I mean, he's called the king for a reason. So, he's been fantastic.
Hey, old school, meet the new school.
Right.
And LeBron is fantastic, and he can turn on a dime. And again, Love is out, so, you know, see how that would play. I'm curious now, you know, in terms of you know, if they never made the trade.
Yeah, would Wiggins have been a better choice?
Wiggins would have been, well, obviously he'd be playing. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. I agree with you. My heart's definitely with Golden State.
Yep.
And I look at it in terms of my head going, I don't ever want to vote against a team that LeBron's on because you can't. They're always going to be in it. But I look at Golden State and say, yes, I think offensively, well, they're the best in the league. They can match with anybody. But on the defensive side, they faced MVP candidate in Harden. I'm not saying Harden's in LeBron's category.
But at least this year, he was top three player in the NBA.
But they have faced a team that has a superstar,
for sure,
in that regard.
Also a tougher road.
A tougher road to get there. And, you know, they've played against a Memphis team where they had to grind it out and actually lost a couple of games there. So they don't play one style. And I think in the finals, with so much adjustments that have to be made, either in-game and especially between games, I think they can make that. Rookie coach is going to win the NBA, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, did you hear that stat? This is the first time since the first year of the NBA that two rookie coaches will coach in the finals.
That's
fantastic. Although, to me, there's one coach, and then the other one is a guy who shows up in a suit.
I don't know about that.
If LeBron isn't the head coach of that team, I don't know who is. Hashtag Reggie Dunlop.
You have to look back and see what Blatt has done with what he's had in the past. He's had a habit of making, you know, great teams out of good teams. I know it's the Euro League. I know it doesn't get very much world championships. I know it doesn't get very much press over here. But Blatt is a fantastic coach. And I go back to the knock that he received when LeBron called his own play. And
that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen a coach do, though.
No.
What?
No, hold on a second. It's not.
Really?
It's not.
To have the number one player in the world pass the ball inbound?
If he's not feeling it at that point, doesn't matter in terms of quality of plays. You looked at, what's it called, NBA Inside with Barkley and Smith. TNT. And Ernie Banks asked them, you know, what do you make of that? And both Smith, Shaq,
yep,
and Barkley turn around and say, yeah, it's no big deal. We do that all the time.
That's a different story, though. You're talking to three big men.
No, but you're saying they're the ones that changing the clothes.
Oh, 100%. Changing,
you know, the coach calls a play and then they change it.
Yeah.
That happens a lot more often than we're ever as fans privy to. So, yeah, you know, I have no problems in terms of that. And I think...
But do you agree with Blatt's call of the play?
Well, it's hard to look now at 2020, you know?
Well, no. I don't think it's that hard. I mean, if you had Jordan, are you going to be like, hey, Jordan, here's what you're going to do. You're going to give the ball to Pippen, and then you don't have that game six drainer.
I forgot how much time was left on the clock there.
Like, barely any.
Yeah.
I think there was like 2.3 seconds to go, and I was actually sitting with a friend of mine. He looked at me. He's like, this game's done. I looked him dead in the eyes. I'm like, LeBron's going to drain this.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you. I wouldn't have him inbounded, and I think that's...
Okay, perfect. Then we're okay.
I wouldn't have LeBron inbounded. If there was a chance for giving him the ball and then him deciding at that point whether to shoot or pass...
Absolutely.
Then that's...
Sure.
Then that's the play I would call.
And we saw that when he was with Miami in their first year. I mean, he had one or two shots in that last game against, who was it, Dallas they lost to? And he passed it off, and that was the argument that people were saying... I think LeBron needs the ball now. Like, he can't be so much of a teammate.
If it's a rookie coach like Steve Kerr, then I think a lot more has to be made. And I'm not saying this is anything. I'm not reading in people's mind. But I know coaches out there that call the wrong play on purpose.
I mean, what, to see what the players do?
So they have to step up. Now, mind you, this is LeBron. You don't do that.
Yeah, that's a little spicy to do.
It is to say it. But like I said, I'm not going to underestimate Blatt.
All right.
I think he's a great coach.
I just have seen lately anybody that's coached LeBron has become essentially a glorified babysitter.
No, I think the opposite is happening.
Really? You think they have to coach more?
No, I think what happens is that you have LeBron.
You're not a good coach.
You're not a good coach.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's a stigma associated with it.
There could be.
Right? And we'll see what happens over time. But yeah, I can't wait to see the that finals matchup. Should be very entertaining. And the way leagues are, NBA, NHL, and so forth, what I've become accustomed to is that whatever team wins the championship, then there are other teams that try and follow suit. And if Golden State wins, then fantastic for the NBA, because I would love to watch that kind of basketball.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
Plus, it'd be a much better model for NBA franchises to build around. I mean, it's been almost, what, 10 years of this whole, you know, who can get the biggest big three?
Right.
Since the Boston Celtics, when they added Garnett, Allen, and Pierce, you've seen that as the copycat move. And, you know, the Lakers tried it, that one last-ditch effort with, you know, Howard, and Bryan, and Nash. I actually thought that wasn't going to be horrible. I thought they were actually going to be pretty good until Nash went down. But you'd much rather teams be able to draft, develop, build.
Spurs.
You know, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And looking at that, it would be cool if that is the new model and the new mold, because I think that would help out the Raptors in the future, because it wouldn't push them to maybe make one or two bad decisions. They might be able to get the right guy. Also, I mean, free agency always helps. But two things I will say to end off the NBA talk. One, speaking of the LeBron shot, I literally had a flashback of Vince Carter taking that exact shot and missing. So that kind of hurt. It was like scary, like close, just like it was when he played for the Mavericks and he hit that shot. And I'm like, yeah, you hit it 10 years later. And other thing, Steph Curry was born in Akron, Ohio. So it is the battle of two Cleveland stars.
Interesting point there. And you don't know how scary that Vince Carter shot was.
I don't. I mean,
you were...
No, I was there. I saw that, man.
I know. How old were you?
What was it, 2011? No, 2000 and...
way back.
2003.
2002? 2000. It was 2001.
Okay, so I was 11.
Yeah, yeah. And here's why it was scary.
Were you behind him?
No. I was on my honeymoon at that time.
Oh, that's why it was scary. It's
very scary.
Because you could have got killed either way. Well, I mean, another Western Conference battle that's been fantastic to watch has been the Anaheim and Chicago series. That's just fantastic hockey.
Going back and forth, back and forth. And
just crazy, because me and Jess were talking, and I was saying that I really bring down that entire series to the goaltending, and that has been exactly the reason why we are where we are right now. I mean, Freddie Anderson allowing, what, 10 goals or 9 goals in the last two games, and the guy like Corey Crawford going from, you know, outhouse to penthouse in the last two series has been fantastic. He's been stellar. And now all it comes down to is which one's going to let in the bad goal in game 7.
Yeah, and that's a fortunate thing, because it's been an entertaining series. I have a taint to one side, unfortunately, that I'm trying to avoid.
Which side is that?
I lean towards Chicago.
Me too.
And
you got to love Johnny Taves and Patrick Kane.
You just do. And not to mention, it's my oldest favorite team. So.
Oh, so there you go.
So I have to be a Blackhawks fan. I do feel, though, that Anaheim has more talent. When you go through the entire roster,
I think all D four might lines, be where they're lacking, though. But yeah,
they a lot have of skill. They have more skill than Chicago. But I'm looking at Chicago. You know, it's Captain Crunch time,
right? And they have him,
and so we'll see.
Blue hat and all.
And I think they need. Chicago's only won one Stanley Cup in the last few years.
No, two.
Taves has two.
Two gold medals. World Juniors.
Three would nicely round out a career, and I can call the Chicago team a dynasty.
Boom! Finally, the dynasty word comes out.
I can.
You know what's funny? I mean, the other thing, too, when you talk about the Chicago Blackhawks, unlike Anaheim, I think Anaheim's best chance to win the Stanley Cup is next year, because Chicago will be dismantled. I mean, not most of the core, but a lot of it will be going away. You're going to have everyone saying Sharp is probably in his last series. You know, Seabrook, depending on what his asking price is, could make a ton of money. I mean, it'd be interesting if Seabrook ends up making more than Keith, because Keith's only making about like 5.7. So, and the, you know, Dion Phaneuf has been upgrading the pay scale of all third-tier defensemen. So, you're going to have the potential of Seabrook making a ton of money, and a lot of guys are going to be moving. I heard Bickle might go. So, I mean, you break down that roster a bit, Anaheim's time might not be this year, but next year with a softer Chicago and a little bit of an older L.A.
Could very well be. I look at it and go, Duncan Keith, you know, only $5.7 million. I mean, the man just, what, averages 32 minutes of ice time in these playoffs?
He's a steal, man. Like,
a goal, three assists in game six. I you know, unbelievable performance, and then hopefully he can keep it up for game seven. And then move on. We're looking at the game seven there, and we are fortunate in the NHL, I think, only the third time in history that both conference finals go to game seven.
Game seven, yeah.
And I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to put it out there.
Shoot.
And if you want to send hate mail, it's at passerled@gmail.com or poppinjoepodcast@gmail.com. And get ready.
At Outlook. poppinjoepodcast@outlook.com.
And we have both.
We're
awesome.
Where do we get all this money?
Loads, promotions.
We got so much cash.
Yeah, you hear all the advertisement, right? Or just tweet us at Poppin' Joe Podcast. So, here it is. Does it really matter who wins Game 7 Friday night between Tampa and the Rangers?
No, not at all. However, it matters for length of series. I think that is the only question mark you're going to get in the cup final. And I don't know if you disagree, but I think if Tampa goes in there, they're lucky to get five. If the Rangers go in there, Lundqvist is the only reason they could get to game six or seven.
And see, I have it the opposite.
Really? You think Bishop and the boys can do it?
I think Tampa has a better chance of making... I think Tampa has a better chance of winning a series than the Rangers do. And I haven't seen, you know, much of the Rangers. I guess I still have memory from last year where they kind of failed unequivocally in the finals.
But they look exactly the same. You haven't missed anything.
And that's my point. I give kudos to Rangers for making the finals last year. I make a kudos to game to grade seven. I just don't think they're a complete team. I think Tampa Bay has a more complete team. I think what hurts Tampa Bay is that they play a more open style of hockey and are more capable of making mistakes, but they're also more capable of bigger rewards. And then that's why I think that they have the opportunity to actually win more games than the Rangers, especially since, and I know that none of them here were before, but Tampa has won a Stanley Cup in the last 10 years.
But, I mean, none of that team is there.
No. But it's there. It's there. And so... there can be some prep there, not like the Leafs. they brought there.
Well, but you know what? Funny enough that you're the one who's going for, you know, offense over essentially the defense, because I think what you're saying is you're playing towards the Western Conference's weakness, which is their goaltending. I mean, granted, I'm not saying they're terrible goalies, but they both have the ability of giving up four or five in a game.
Yeah.
So, but those teams know how to win 2-1. And, you know, the Rangers sure as hell know how to lose 2-1. So, or 1-0. So, I mean, that's not a bad point. It's interesting, though, because, I mean, you know, we're in a city, and I think Pittsburgh would also acknowledge that we've seen offense fail us. And it's interesting that you're giving the credit to, you know, the Eastern boy who's got the biggest gun to go into the Western Conference and be able to at least have a shooter's chance, essentially.
I'd say I think that the opposite. I think the offense is the only thing that was positive about the Leafs until they...
For sure.
But it would only take you so far.
Right.
Right? And then I think Shanahan was right to go defensive, but then realized, like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, what Carlisle did with this team was unbelievable.
Yeah, the fact that he doesn't have a job blows my mind.
Like they took the Leafs team and went, wow, like... in terms of analyzing player and assessing them, he was bang on and developing a system for it. But and like I said, regardless, Saturday night, I think, is the Stanley Cup champion final.
Yeah.
In my regards.
So you think the Rangers have this one in the bag, though?
On Friday?
Yeah. Have you heard the numbers or
the info
behind it? Man, it's crazy. Lundqvist unbeaten at home during an elimination, and the Rangers have never lost a game seven in MSG.
Yep. No,
it could be epic either way.
It would be. But like I said, and all your hate mails can come in, I don't think it means a lick.
Right. So, I did miss last week, and I missed probably one of the most interesting days in Toronto for a Pop and Joe podcast.
So it was.
I wanted to crack your head open for about 2 minutes about this.
Before?
Not actually.
Before that? Tear in my eye. I missed you, Joe.
I know I missed you too. It's such you. I'm glad we are back together.
In our reunion show.
It's very good. We are reunited finally.
And it feels so good.
So good. Reunited and it feels so good. And we didn't have that cued, by the way. That was actually the magic in the air.
Yes, yes.
That song just happened, you like know, the angels.
When has pop not been bitter? I mean, I don't know if it's the majority of it is being reunited with you. Houston out of the playoffs. I am just in such a happy mood.
I know. Pop's excited.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I honestly, it was different, but this feels like home.
And one day, maybe we will have Alex and Jess back. And thank you. Shout out to both of them.
Yeah, fantastic work.
Really appreciate it.
Definitely do our best to make sure we can get maybe both of them in at the same time. I'll have to do some mic shifting, but we should do our best. So, what do you think? I know you probably gave your opinion, but I'd love to hear. What do you think about the Leafs signing Mike Babcock?
In 30 seconds or less,
here's
my feelings. I think it was a fantastic signing. I think it's the one real option that they have here. My one fear, my one big, big fear is the Leaf universe either putting on pressure or now getting the opinion that we're a step ahead. Patience, people. Patience, patience, patience. Babcock is not a number one center. He is not your first and second defenseman. He is not your number one goalie. He is a coach in one piece. You still need to get these players, and it's still going to take time to get these players, and I'm talking years. So please be patient. Don't expect him to make the playoffs in the next 2 years. Don't put the pressure on him or on the Leafs to be better just because we have Babcock. That's my fear.
For me, I think it's three or four main points. The first being, I think having a coach like Mike Babcock is going to accelerate the process of becoming a better franchise, but not in the same way people usually see the acceleration in Toronto. I don't think Babcock is going to be the cause of a stupid trade or a terrible signing. Like, for example, people were saying, you know, a guy like Matt Bolesky, how much money could he make? Not going to happen. But what I do think is that having a coach like Mike Babcock around could potentially improve the players we have now and maybe aid the younger players that are already in the NHL that are having some issues, like like a Jake Gardner, or maybe get more out of a guy like James Van Riemsdyk, because it's clear he's not going anywhere. And the potential of Morgan Rielly could significantly increase having a guy like Babcock. So I think that's the way it would speed up. Second of all, I think the most important thing Mike Babcock has said over the last 2 weeks he's been the head coach of the Maple Leafs is that he believes there are a lot of talented players in the NHL that are from Ontario that want to come back home. And he's guaranteeing that they will. That's very intriguing because over the next 2 summers, Stamkos and then Tavares will be free agents. Now, I'm not sitting here saying it's going to happen. I am sitting here saying, though, before Babcock, no way. After, eh.
You never know. He's got relationships with them and so forth. And
right. We'll coach see. One wanted to coach one.
Yep.
You know. And then third, I think what's most important is that regardless of the way it goes, I always believe that the foundation is probably the most important. And seeing Mike Babcock say that he looked everybody at Toronto in the eye and said, hey, are you, you know, he's like, are you ready for this? Well, it's going to be pain. It's going to be a lot of pain.
Yep.
And I'm like, the fact that Mike Babcock came in and he's ready to hurt, but he's trying to see if these guys will stick to their guns. I thought it'd be the other way around.
Exactly.
So that's the three most intriguing points to me with Mike Babcock. I'm most excited to just see the guy behind the bench scowling, and if Phil Kessel's on that team and he does not back check, I'm going to record the hell out of the scowl number 81 is going to get from Mike Babcock. But he could be a defenseman, to argue your point, because he played defense in the English league. He had a good amount of points, so maybe Fenoz found his partner. I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? I look at it and go, you know what? It's going to be interesting. Again, I think he's going to make the players that are here better.
For sure.
And again, the question always nags in the back of my head. Is that what is best for the Leafs? I mean, does that mean finishing ninth? Sorry, from ninth from the end? Rather than in top five, so you lose on a top True. Five pick. Like, that's what worries me, right?
Yeah.
But, and the fact that they went, I don't know if I can say this, ass backwards.
They did go ass backwards.
No GM. Not that they need one.
Well, you know, I'm looking at a de facto GM. They're kind of, the guy who's going to be hired, no offense to who he is, I think he's going to be a lame duck general manager, almost in the sense of the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah, I don't think necessarily lame duck. I think it's just a matter of, you know what, here's our scenario, you have to fit into that, rather than right. the typical GM coming in and saying,
he is
this is how the scenario is going to be. But like I said, I don't think they need it for the draft. I don't think there's any rush to put it. And quite honestly, it might not even be necessary to go ahead and do so.
Well, actually, I'm speaking of the draft. I'm working on a story about the Leafs' potential draft pick, either being Dylan Strome or Mitch Marner. And we will give you a sneak peek of interviews that I had with Mitch Marner, and I'm still working on Dylan Strome. Hopefully, I'm able to get that.
Fantastic.
And for next episode, maybe we'll do a little bit of work on there and then give you guys a listen to, for now, with Mitch Marner, speaking to him. The blue and white would be a very good choice for Mitch Marner. I think he's a big, big supporter from what I can tell. You could almost hear him smiling when asked about him being a Maple Leaf. So, I mean, I think they know who they're drafting.
Right.
In your fourth spot. It's essentially who Arizona's drafting. That's the question. If they get Noah Hanifin, the Leafs will draft Dylan Strome. But if they draft Dylan Strome, the question is, do you take the defenseman who's rated above, or do you take the known commodity?
I think it's always harder to get defense.
Yeah, but when your assistant general manager used to coach and, you know, manage the number fourth rated player in the draft, or number fifth rated player in the draft in Marner.
He's got some insight. Yeah, no, I agree. And like I said, I don't think you can go wrong with either of them at this stage. It's like, you know, you go back in the NBA draft when Michael Jordan was picked third and, you know, Akeem Olajuwon went first. Yeah, 30 years later, you don't.
No, you don't know.
You don't say that.
Draft schmaff. Right,
they picked. No. I mean, you would still pick Akeem first.
Really?
Oh no, with the size and everything back then. Yeah. So you don't play.
Oh, like music. Without hindsight, right? Yeah.
You don't. There was no mistake. Now, whoever went second there, forget about. Yeah. But in terms of Akeem and everything like that, there was no mistake there. That's nobody knew what Jordan was going to be, kind of thing.
And it could be interesting too. I mean, you bring in a guy like Babcock, who's from an organization who's been able to continuously make the playoffs and who have not drafted higher than I think 15th or 20th in the last, you know.
And pick
years.
Superstars in the 200s.
Like, you know that third round pick's going to be the next Pavel Datsyuk, right? Like, Toronto just traded, like, a superstar. Because, you know, Detroit's going to turn that around and be like, this guy.
One quick thing, and hopefully you can clarify this for me before we move on.
Yeah.
Shanahan fired a lot of people.
Yeah.
When you're the coach was gone.
It was a bloodletting, man. When it was like a Game of Thrones episode.
When you're the GM was gone.
Yeah.
He also fired the entire scouting staff.
Yes.
I heard a story behind that, and I haven't been able to confirm with any other sources.
Okay.
And I want to know if you heard anything about it. And the reason why is because I haven't heard anything about it, and to me, this is the story.
Right.
They fired the entire scouting staff because they found out that scouts weren't scouting the people that they were supposed to.
Yeah.
For an organization that had such poor results for years in either drafting or bringing up draft picks, because it's a two-headed monster. How does this go on?
That I do not know. Apparently that was the issue, that the Maple Leafs scouting staff were not actually doing their job. Again, I mean, you don't know for sure.
If that is the case and they've cleaned that up, at least that's a good start. Unfortunately, you're probably not going to see the fruits of that labor for another 2-3 years because that's what's gotten the permanent. But my God, I can't believe they let it last that long. Unbelievable.
Well, I mean, the Suits at MLSE are doing a pretty good job for now. I would say they're probably one of the better upper management that we've seen in Toronto for a while. There's a couple suits slash lawsuits that have been going around sports lately, and it's not fantastic, especially not for the soccer purists and enthusiasts right about now.
I disagree.
Oh, you love this.
I am. What is wrong? You, maybe it is you, because we're away for 2 weeks, and all of a sudden, Pop is in a great mood.
So happy.
I am so happy. I have.
Absence does make the heart grow fonder.
But what's going on in FIFA, and initially I read the reports and I heard about the arrests, and I think it's up to 14 now, and I'm going,
wow, 14?
And I'm going,
jeez.
And going, you know what? Big deal. And so because it was, that's not a big news story, and I went, they haven't touched Sepp Blatter, and the World Cups are still in Russia and Qatar. So really, right. what it is. But the more I'm getting into it, is it has to start somewhere. And that's what I'm happy to see. I'm happy to see that this investigation is going on. I'm happy to see that, you know, Switzerland helped the U.S. And obviously they're not going to go in with their and arrest people unless they had some convincing that was done. And it's a situation that appalls me.
Yeah.
And it appalls me in a way of the arrogance that FIFA has been running for decades. And even now, even after, you know, this, and we knew this was going on. We knew that there was corruption there. We knew people were taking bribes. Because, I mean, when you look at Qatar winning, there's only two logical conclusions.
Either money or crazy.
Crazy, stupidity.
Yeah.
Right? So either you're all stupid or you're all bribes. And everybody was picking the bribes because that made more sense in the long run. But FIFA's PR man, I love this. After the arrests, I think his name is DiGregorio. Here's a couple of quotes from him. And this is what I refer to about the arrogance of FIFA. He says, "This for FIFA is good. It's not good in terms of image or reputation, but in terms of cleaning up, this is good." And then he goes on to say that he insists FIFA is the damaged party.
They're in so much pain.
FIFA is the damaged party.
That is like the ultimate soccer flop. That is like the guy walking by, just goes down like a ton of bricks, looks for the ref for the red.
Yeah, and as he's falling down, looking at the ref, yeah. You know, yeah. Smiling.
Gets no call, jumps up, says, yeah. What the hell? Absolutely.
It's just like the absolute arrogance of it, and I can't wait for more to happen. And I'm hoping that more happens. It might take a couple of years, even to just extradite these officials. But I hope eventually they get Sepp's name on a ballot and he goes to trial.
I mean, ultimately, I don't see him getting indicted anytime soon, only because it's still a corporation that makes a lot of countries and a lot of people a lot of money. I mean, they were saying that this has potentially been happening for over 24 years, 25 years, that's known about, obviously. I mean, soccer has been crooked since, I mean, England's win in 66, some would argue. So
you can send hate mail to BatPop. Just kidding.
Yeah, I apologize to all the English fans, but if you Google it, it's been actually acknowledged that was a rigged FIFA World Cup. But when you see, you know, the calamity that's been around moving the World Cup to Qatar, and when I say calamity, the reason why is because the death toll just to build stadiums in Qatar has been ridiculous.
With the slave labor.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. But then again, you look at it and you say, well, like, what the, are you gonna freaking move it now? Like, after all that crap and all this, you know, like, you know, the lives that were taken, you're just gonna pick up and leave. And it was, like, literally all for naught. And I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying it's tough. I don't know. It's such an awkward situation that you can't believe it's actually real.
Yeah.
That you would go to that far of a level knowing that this could be such a danger and a hazard to not only your players but those that are helping put on the function. It's ridiculous.
No, and like I said, they can make things up as they go along. I mean, there is the old adage, it's a lot easier to ask for forgiveness than it is for permission. And that's almost like FIFA does on a consistent basis. Not that they ever ask forgiveness. God, no, they would never ask for forgiveness. Sure. But it was like, no, it's not too hot there. Yeah, but Brazil, you know, it's dying. In Qatar, it's 15 degrees hotter. Like, what do you mean? No, it's not too hot there. They can play there.
Yeah.
No, it's not too hot there. They can play there. Repeat 3 or 4 times. Yeah. And then, you know what?
It's friggin' hot there.
It's hot there. We're going to move it to December. Like,
yeah, that's nuts.
And nobody can say anything about it. End of story. And, you know, they've done it over and over again. There is nothing new here. There is nothing new under the sun. And I'm just glad that, you know, hopefully they get the time and they rip almost to the point where if they start another organization entirely. The possibility of something like that is out there.
Ultimately, I think it would be just a complete bloodletting, and it would just be nobody in FIFA chooses the next version of FIFA, and it should be like an external, you know, organization that develops the voting, chooses the people that would like to do it, and then install them. I mean, no wonder guys like Figo left FIFA a couple of weeks ago.
Anyway, he was going for the presidency.
Nobody knew why. Like, how come Figo left presidency?
Oh, his quote? Because I'm talking to other officials who claim that somebody is the devil, and then they go up on stage and claim that they are God.
Right.
So with the angels. So he knows.
FIFA is becoming like the Illuminati of the sports, eh? Like, they just do. Oh. And you don't know.
People are saying that, you know, they should be like, they're like the mafia. Like the mafia? The mafia would kill to be like FIFA. FIFA is so far advanced in that regard because they do it in everybody's faces.
Yeah, and they're just selling soccer. It's not even that hard.
So, but anyways.
Well, I mean, the way it's looking, the 2026 World Cup might be held in a penitentiary. So, it might be close for all of them.
I saw on Twitter a verse that they had EA's FIFA 16 with a copy of Sepp Blatter behind bars. And I thought that would be cool.
It'd be like a live version of The Longest Yard.
There is actually
soccer one.
A soccer one with... What's his name?
Jason. Movie was called Mean Machine.
That's right, with Jason Statham.
Jason Statham.
I can never pronounce
his name. Yeah, and Tony something, the English guy. He's in all the Guy Ritchie movies. I can't remember his name. It's Tony something.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Great movie.
Yes.
Great movie reference. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. Fantastic. Also, absolutely love the one with Brad Pitt. Snitch.
Yes, Snatch, the diamond, yes.
Yeah, your decks. What? No, your decks. Good movie. Check them out, Guy Ritchie. Well, thank you for listening to the 10th edition of the Pop and Joe podcast. I guess we've reached a milestone.
Our big reunion episode.
Yeah, fantastic reunion episode. We're glad to have you guys. Pop, it was nice to see you, and I hope we definitely don't get sick and we can do this next week.
It's been a pleasure, Joe, and yeah, I look forward to it as well.
Make sure to stay away from FIFA, guys.
Be good, boys.
They won't let me out. They won't let me out.